This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing Picture Perfect Mysteries. Dun dun dun. Newlywed and Dead. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one and we will see you next time. Are you ready
for Wonder Kiss?
Yay!
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies, where we recap one maestery in May. And today we are doing Picture Perfect Mysteries, Newlywed and Dead. And I am here with my always picture perfect co-host, Miss Tamara Cozio.
You saw my shit, damn it. And I am here with my camera ready, never overexposed or underexposed.
Ooh.
The positive to my negative, Corinne Edding.
I said
camera ready, not picture perfect.
So I did not.
You said picture perfect. I was like, got it.
Because you expounded on it all in a beautiful way, whereas I took the cheap
Woo.
Out.
All right. I win. Yes.
You totally win.
Nice. So we have quite a few things to discuss. First and foremost, that this is our last episode for a little while. We're taking a little break. We decided to make it 5 weeks just to make our lives a little easier and because we have a shit ton of stuff coming up, including Bridget's Celebration of Life service.
Yay! Celebration of Life! Celebration times, come on! Do-do-do-do-do-do-do! Yay! The really exciting thing is, when we come back, it'll be July and we'll be doing Christmas in July. I'm so excited!
Wait, wait! Yes, we're going to do gay-themed Christmas in July.
Yes!
We have to think of a clever name. Let's workshop something.
Gay-smas? No. Chris Gay? Gay-mas.
Oh.
Christmas in Gay-lie.
Good. I thought something was going to land on me really, really fast and really, really quick. And that is not the case at all. I'll keep thinking about it. Do you want to tell them about, because I know you're excited. I know you can't wait to lay on some more ping pong knowledge on people.
Oh, I was going to let you share about that.
Oh, no, you go right ahead, girl, because that was your baby. And I'm still thinking about the gay theme that we're going to do in July. So I will let you. Yes, you go ahead and do our corrections corner for that, and I'm going to think long and hard over here.
So we were very fortunate to have the ladies from One Kiss Means Forever to reach out to us, Katie and Hannah, who are fantastic and lovely and witty. They said, hey girl, hey, do you know about the ping pong scene in the Crossword Puzzle Mysteries movie? And I was like, no, but I remarked on it a lot. And you know how I love a good ping pong fact. Well, it turns out that the person that she was initially playing ping pong with was Will Shortz, who is the creator of and editor of the New York Times crossword puzzles. So he is a huge puzzle head and very much, basically Lacey Chabert is playing the equivalent of him in the movie, except one that solves crimes. Will Shortz does not solve crimes, but
that we know of.
But apparently Will Shortz, who is crossword puzzle royalty, also, he is a table tennis aficionado who owns a table tennis club and plays every day. Like, his streak is, in the words of Hannah, something like 500 days in a row. He's very proud of it.
What?
So he must have his paddle with him and the ping pong ball. And just like when he needs to think, like I said, in the crossword puzzle mystery recap that we did, he just takes out that ball and starts knocking it against the wall, knocking it against the wall. He needs to think a little bit. So he apparently appears in all of the crossword puzzle mystery movies, much like Al Roker does in the, oh, fuck, what are, what?
The Morning Show Mysteries.
Morning, thank you. Yes, the Morning Show Mysteries. So very excited about the Will Shortz fact, and I bet you thought we were done with ping pong slash table tennis fun facts.
And then Hannah messaged us, and I was like, dang it, Hannah. I'm just kidding. Love you, Hannah. And Katie, she chimed in too.
Yes, she did. They both contributed greatly to table tennis, ping pong, Will Shorts conversation. Speaking of which, if you are interested in watching the crossword puzzle documentary that features Will Shorts, famous crossword puzzle editor and creator extraordinaire from the New York Times, is Wordplay. It also features Jon Stewart, as I said in the previous episode. Yay! Woo! Do you have any gay Christmas wisdom?
For titles?
Uh-huh.
No. I have a couple, but I don't think they're going to work for all gay people. There was a Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which I thought, but that only applies to gay men calling themselves Merry.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Slay and Julay.
Slay and Julay. That's beautiful. You have touched me with
your
words.
I thought they had more titles with gay in it. Hold on. You talk amongst yourselves. Lyrics with gay. Oh, shit.
What?
Make the Yuletide gay.
In July, we're going to make the Yuletide gay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I like that. What do you think?
Yeah, that's great. I'm here for it.
Yep. I think that's our winner. Make the Yuletide gay.
Fantastic. Hey, all right. Okay. Do you have a synopsis for us?
I do. Allie, played by Alexa Peña Vega, runs a small photo studio in Willow Haven. She's the town's go-to for family portraits, birthday parties, and weddings, until one day when she is shooting her friend Jenna's wedding, someone else is doing a little shooting of their own. During the first dance as a married couple, the groom is shot and killed. Allie gets entwined in the case as she tries to clear her brother, who is being accused of the crime. Meanwhile, she has to navigate a complicated partnership with Detective Sam Acosta, who's played by Carlos Peña Vega, and is coincidentally Alexa Peña Vega's husband in real life.
Ooh, there must be a lot of steamy heat between the two of them, then.
You would really think so. You would really think so. But we will talk about it deeper into the movie. Anyways, Allie needs Detective Sam Acosta's help to solve the case while he's trying to convict her brother, while she has the hots for him. So it's a whole trifecta of trouble.
Ooh.
So keep focus with us as we expose the true murderer on this episode of Picture Perfect Mysteries, Newlywed and Dead. Get it? Keep focus as we expose.
Nice.
Corinne, do you have some fun facts?
Why, yes, I do. So today for fun facts, I have brought a special guest with us that will give us special insight into the world of picture studios. I would like to introduce you to Miss Tamara Cosio. Yay!
Yay! Oh, yeah, yay! I'm worried.
So in Picture Perfect Mysteries, the protagonist, Alexis Peña Vega, who plays Allie, she owns her own portrait studio. And I happen to know that Miss Tamara Cosio worked at a portrait studio for many years. And so I thought she
worked,
could give us
and managed
and managed a behind the scenes look into the grind of the portrait studio and like ask her the hard hitting questions like, have you witnessed any murders at your photo studio?
No. No.
Oh.
Can say definitively no.
Huh. Okay. Fine. How many mysteries have you solved at your photo studio?
Oh, shit. Oh, God. None. It was, people kept stealing pictures because we threw them away, but that's about it.
My next question is, why did we never do a couple's photo shoot at the studio with each other?
It's so funny because I have so many pictures of so many people because mostly my coworkers at the time, because we would get bored and just have big full-on photo shoots with each other.
Yeah.
And sometimes we get like super creative. So I have like many 8x10s of these people, and people will be like, oh, are you guys really good friends? Nah. But I don't have a ton. I have a ton of pictures of people that came in wanting me to take pictures of their kids because I would give them a discount. But I don't have a lot of pictures with me and my outside friends and family. It's just, I have a couple, but mostly with my exes. Like, we would do photo shoots quite frequently. Yeah. But there is one, I'm still mad about this. There is one photo shoot that I did with my sister and my father, which I'm super glad that I did because yes. It's one of the last pictures that me and Denise and my dad have together. My sister, who's gorgeous, likes taking pictures. And so she would always be like, I want to do a photo shoot. I want to do a photo shoot. And I was like, okay, come in. I'll do a photo shoot with you. I think my dad came into town and she had mentioned that she wanted to do a photo shoot on one of the days that I worked. And I was like, okay, that's fine. So went to work. She came in about 3 hours into my shift and she's like, okay, Tam, are you ready to take pictures? And I was like, yeah, let's go. And she's like, no, you're going to be in the pictures. I was like, bitch, I'm in my work uniform. I have 3 hours of work sweat on me. And you want me to do a photo shoot with you and dad? She goes, well, yeah, I told you. And I was like, no, you said you wanted to do a photo shoot. I didn't know I was going to be in it. So we have this lovely picture that is very soft focused to cover all the glistening on my forehead, where I am literally in my work shirt and have like half my makeup smeared off because it was hard work. And I was so mad at her. But now, in hindsight, probably one of the best things I ever did because we have that little keepsake.
Aww, I love that. So how many years did you work at the photo studio and how many children did you charm into smiling?
Hundreds. Wait, no. Hundreds of children, not hundreds of years. I probably worked there all together for 11 years off and on. And it was a lot of fun. Like, it was creative. I got to exercise my creative juices. It was entertaining because you were trying to get people to laugh and smile. But it was also frustrating when you had those moms that were like, he's fine. I know he's purple and has been crying for 45 minutes, but he's going to take this picture today. Oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah. I don't think it's going to happen, but you know, I don't know.
How many children did you make cry?
Oh, plenty. That was the best when you got in their face and you're like, hi, honey. Like, they were perfectly fine and gooing and gawing and smiling at everything. And then you get in front of them and they're like, and I was like, oh, shit. That does nothing for your confidence.
Oh, I would have been terrified of anyone. So as a kid, I understand. I wouldn't have cried. I just would have like looked terrified and potentially hid. So
Shocking.
I know. Do you have any other picture studio wisdom that you would or memories that you would like to share?
Most of my time working at the Picture People was in the small town of Fresno, California. It's not super small, but it's not super big. And I hated it because 70% of the time when I went out shopping or to Costco or to a department store, I would see somebody that I had photographed and I would immediately like, oh, he was laying on the floor. His wife was leaning over him and their baby was in the crook of his arm. Like, I could see the picture that I took perfectly of them every time that I saw somebody in the real world. And I honestly think that's why I kind of have a little bit of face blindness now, because I saw so many people in my formative years that my memory is full. My faces are full and cannot take any more.
One last question. As part of your uniform, did you have to wear a hat with a propeller on top of it?
I hate you and I refuse to answer that question.
The answer's yes. The answer's yes. She's giving me the eyes of murder, gentle listeners. Mm-hmm. If you don't hear from me again, you know why.
Imagine my sister coming in with my propeller beanie hat and my fishing vest and my white button-up shirt with the photograph tie and be like, are you ready to take pictures? Fuck you.
Hey, you made that work because, one, I never would have known. I did notice it was very soft focus. But, two, you, like, took off your photograph your photograph tie, you popped the collar on that bad boy, so you just made it look like you were wearing a cute little white shirt, and you did take off the propeller hat, so to your credit, so you made that magic happen. Yeah. So are you ready to get into Picture Perfect Mysteries Newlywed and
I am
Dead?
I sure am. We open with wedding preparations. People are milling about, arranging flowers, placing gifts on tables. The cake is wheeled in, and Allie, the photographer, is catching it all on her camera. Her assistant, Noah, comes in. Perfect timing, because she needs a new SIM card. And while she's fishing it out of his bag, she gives him the rundown of all the rules a wedding photographer needs. Such as, no detail is too small, and never, ever, 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 ever miss the first kiss. Allie goes into the bridal suite to take pictures of the bride, but the bride looks troubled. She's standing in front of a full-length mirror, looking less than thrilled. Allie asks if she's okay, and she admits that she's a little nervous. Everything seems to be going wrong with the wedding. Their parents won't stop bickering. The videographer was overbooked, and she lost her something borrowed and her something blue. And to top it off, she groans, I haven't even finished my vows. And there was that whole thing that happened last night. Allie sheepishly looks down. I heard. The bride gazes at her intently. Did Greg tell you? No, Allie admits your mom did when I got in this morning. Allie offers to come back later to take the candids and give the bride some time to write her final vows. Before she leaves, she realizes she has a bluebird pen on her camera strap and hands it to the bride, saying, now you have something borrowed and something blue. The bride thanks Allie as she hurries away. Next, Allie and Noah are walking down the hallway at the hallway at the banquet hall. It's a lot of halls, but it's true. Until they see the groom on the phone having a heated argument. He's standing a distance away, saying, I don't care what you say. If you show up here, I will not be held responsible for my actions. Noah and Allie back away, back away, back away, back away from the call. And whatever they need to do in that room can wait until later. Instead, they go into the main ceremony space and take pictures of the wedding party in front of the flower garland. Allie snaps pictures of Mr. and Mrs. Davis, the groom's parents, and they seem noticeably annoyed. She straightens Mr. Davis's tie, takes a few more shots while he asks, are we all done here? And then leaves. In a huff. In a huff!
In a huff!
There is some tension. And Noah asks Allie about it. She lets him know that, yeah, there's a little more tension than usual because there was an unexpected guest at the rehearsal dinner the night before. The bride's ex-boyfriend showed up and caused some drama. Just then a bridesmaid passes by, glares at Allie and says, you have some nerve showing up here. Allie sucks her teeth, turns to Noah and admits the ex-boyfriend also happened to be her brother Greg. Noah makes an oh shit face because they're in for an eventful evening.
Oof. A little later, Jenna, the bride, is getting ready when her fiancé, Kevin, knocks on the door wanting to talk. Jenna shouts, Kevin, I love you, but in the name of all that is good in this world, stay on the other side of the door. It's bad luck for the bride and groom to see each other before the wedding, and we've already had enough bad luck. Kevin agrees. He wants to tell her something, but Jenna can tell from the tone of his voice that it's not a last-minute assurance of love from him. Instead, it's something bad. So she convinces him to talk to her about it after the ceremony.
Would you have done that?
No. No, I would not have.
I'd be like, did you cheat on me? What's going on? He's like, I need to know now. You can't tell me I'm going to tell you something, but I'll tell you later. And I'd be like, Kevin, close your eyes and tell me quickly what you have to say. What did you do?
Oh, I totally agree. I would do the same. But I also would be like, you can come on in and see me. Unless I was doing a big surprise reveal.
I have to have a surprise reveal. You know me and my
surprise revealing self.
Drama.
Drama.
And my drama. You're like, I love the drama. I don't. I really don't.
I know you and your 10-foot train. It's really awkward, gentle listeners, when we go out together and she makes me carry this train of fabric behind her because she needs to make a statement whenever she goes into some place.
You can just imagine my wedding day. I'm like, yes, I'm going to have a 10-foot train. Corinne, you won't have to carry it. We're going to put a little red wagon underneath the train and you can just sit on top of it and I'll pull you along behind
yes!
me.
Yes! I will be there with a tiara on. Thank you. The wedding goes great, other than Kevin's parents and sister looking incredibly unhappy. Also, I believe that we have a ding! Tamara, the professional photographer, wedding tip. So, when they're taking pictures of the ceremony, Allie is snapping away with her photos and her assistant is standing next to her.
Oh my god, this drove me fucking crazy. because Allie's in the front row like a guest, and she has her camera, and she's like, click, click, click. Oh, look at all the great pictures I'm taking. Click, click, click. And I'm like, are you serious? You're getting the camera, you're getting the wedding from one angle and one angle only, and you have an assistant that's just standing right by him going, all right, Kevin and Jenna, so happy to be here, like clapping along with everybody else. And I'm like, bitch, pick up your camera and go take some pictures. That's what you're there for. Like, I have seen some weddings where there's full on, like, the videographer is down the middle of the aisle, and they have like three photographers stationed around the nuptials, and they're snapping a ton of different angled pictures. And I think that a lot of times people are like, I don't want it to be overt. I don't want you distracting from what's going on, which is fair. But then you can still get two really good angles because you have two photographers there. Ah! I do not have strong feelings about this.
I thought the same thing. I thought it was odd. And as somebody who majored in video production, samesies, samesies.
Yeah.
So thank you for your professional photography wedding tip and for sharing your wisdom with us.
Solve mysteries. Give us a call. There's a tab on ODK right next to the carpentry, renovations, construction, and party planning. Oh, wait. Wasn't there dating tips, too? I do it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you need. What you need.
We're entrepreneurial, you see. We're diverse. We diversify. Yes. Hmm. So we move on to the reception and wait. What? Speaking of diversifying, it's Nelson motherfucking Wong as DJ Kenny Kwan. Woo! And Nelson motherfucking Wong appears as Kenny Kwan in many of Ron Oliver, the directors of this movie, of his movies. And Kenny Kwan has had many different careers, diversifying his careers throughout the different Hallmark movies that we have seen him in. And he has played a delivery person and a mail carrier, as well as being a receptionist and so many other things. But today, he is DJ Kenny Kwan. DJ Kenny Kwan announces the couple's first dance as Mr. and Mrs. Kevin and Jenna Davis. The bride and groom walk out as a Michael Bublé-type singer sings Summer Wind as it plays through the reception hall. Everyone is loving it, except for Kevin's side of the family and a disgruntled gent in a suit. They dance on, romantically looking at each other's in their eyes, doing a little spin back. And just as a confetti cannon goes off, Kevin dips Jenna down and then brings her back up. And then as the confetti flutters around them, Kevin drops to the floor. He has been shot. He is dieded.
So it would have run differently in my family. God damn it. Did you have too many martinis before we danced? I warned you about this and go out with your boys the night before for a bachelor party was a stupid idea.
That makes a lot of sense. Yes. I think that your first instinct is the way to go.
Yeah. If Jenna was a co-CEO, she'd be pissed and yelling at him before, oh shit, you're bleeding. Damn. Okay. Sorry. Take everything back.
Oh, wait, you're not breathing? Oh, this might be a little bit of a problem. So, what was once a stressful wedding is now a crime scene, and all the guests sit around stunned. Detective Sam Acosta approaches Allie and requests a copy of the photos from that day. Of course, Allie agrees, but as he's about to leave, Kevin's sister Sarah walks over the aforementioned bridesmaid, angry bridesmaid that Tamara mentioned earlier. And she says to Detective Acosta, while she gives Allie the stink eye, if you're looking for a place to start, you should look at her brother, Greg. Allie looks puzzled. How does her brother, Greg, figure into all of this? Detective Acosta asks the same question. Why is that? Sarah continues to give Allie a penetrating stare as she tearfully says, because he killed Kevin, and walks off. Dun, 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 dun.
After the questioning, Allie goes to her brother Greg's house. It's a small Cape Cod style, and the lights are off. She knocks on the door, but there's no answer. So she pulls up the welcome mat and gets his spare key. Bad, 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 bad idea. Don't put your key under the mat. Mm-hmm. Just saying. She goes inside, and the place is empty. She walks through calling his name. Greg? Greg? But no answer. There is, however, a pizza box in the sink and a Chinese food box laying sideways on the counter, the only two things in the immaculately clean house that's supposed to maybe indicate that he was having a hard time and his place is such a mess, quotation marks.
They obviously have not seen my apartment as an example of I am having a hard time and my place is such a mess.
I know. I was like, oh, maybe they're too, because I was like, oh, it's such a cute little house. Oh, man, there's food boxes. There's two food boxes on the counter. One, two. Okay.
And two very...
One's pizza and one's Chinese, so... Oh, I see what they're doing. Oh, he's so distraught. Look at... He couldn't even clean up after himself.
Except the two food boxes are, like, immaculate. So...
Yes. Very clean. No food in sight. But two food boxes. Ooh. Hallmark, you can do better. Allie finally goes home, but she's not done. She calls his phone relentlessly and leaves messages asking where he's at and why she can't get a hold of him. Eventually, she calls his work and gets a hold of his boss, the fire chief, Ed. Ed is a shrewd man. He hears Allie on the phone and tries to sell her tickets to the fireman pancake breakfast. But Allie's not there for breakfast food. She wants to know if he's seen her brother, but Ed has not. He's supposed to be in the next day. He swapped shifts with a colleague, so that day he has off. Allie looks concerned, but covers it while she tells the chief, as soon as he comes in, can you tell him I'm looking for him? He agrees to do so, and Allie pointedly goes over to her photo studio door and slowly flips the close sign to open, because you need to know that she works at a portrait studio and why this is a picture-perfect mystery. So they have all kinds of little things where they go over and we're in a portrait studio. Look at, we're still in a portrait studio. We're in a portrait studio that have nothing to do with the storyline. Because when you have a mystery, the person that you want to solve it is a photographer.
Yes. That's why you got called into so many mysteries when you were working at the picture people.
He did not. Meanwhile, across town, Detective Acosta and Chief Dunn are talking about the murder. There hasn't been a murder around here in 25 years. But even though there's not a lot of evidence, they did find a slug and removed it from the body. It came from a 54 Beretta, which is not a big gun, and whoever shot the person had enough time between the shooting and the police showing up that they could have stashed the gun anywhere. Chief Dunn tells him to get a guest list from the bride and tell Carlin that he's going to accompany you on this case. Acosta is completely against having a partner because when he was in New York, but the chief reminds him that he's not in New York anymore. Carlin knows the area and he'll be a great partner on this. Acosta begrudgingly agrees, passes his new partner's desk, disgruntled. It's questionable what kind of cop Carlin is because he's sitting there very leisurely with his feet up doing a crossword puzzle. In true detective form, I guess.
Wow.
A crossword puzzle.
Yes, it's a crossword over from our other movie.
So, Detective Acosta and Carlin go to the bride Jenna's house, and since they're already there for the guest list, they decide to ask her a few questions. Was there anybody that wanted to hurt her late husband? Of course not! He was kind and wonderful. Just then, Allie arrives and interrupts the questioning. Carlin sees this as a good time to leave. They can save the rest for later, but Acosta does not think so. He has some other things he wants to ask, but the more seasoned cop escorts him out, much to his chagrin. He looks at Allie as if it's all her fault, but lets it go because Jenna says, "Oh my God, I'm so glad that you're here." So he agrees to leave. But before he does, Acosta tells Allie that they're having a hard time finding her brother Greg and if she knows where he is. She does not. But if she did, I'm not entirely sure she would tell him. Corinne, thoughts?
No, I don't think she would tell him because she is loyal and I like that about her. What about you?
I don't think she would either. I think she would believe that he's innocent and try to clear his name before she, you know, sends him off to the police.
And I think that she would at least want to check in with him about things before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't be like grabbing my brother's arm and be like, "We're going to the police station. Why? Don't ask questions. We're just going." I would definitely like be like, "What the fuck were you doing last night? Where were you?"
Yes.
Why is there blood all over your hands? I'm just kidding. There's not. But Acosta says if Allie thinks of anything to give him a call and hands her his card. And in turn, she digs into her purse and hands him the flash drive with all the wedding photos. Once they leave, Jenna tells her that they were asking a lot of questions about Craig. Allie asks Jenna if she thinks he could do something like that. And Jenna's quiet for a moment before saying she doesn't know who would be capable of shooting her husband. Dun, dun, dun.
That evening, Allie goes back to her photography studio / living space. The studio is dark and she hears a noise.
God damn it.
You're supposed to say it's her brother Greg.
I know. I was going to wait till you said the next noise.
The studio is dark and she hears a noise.
It's your brother Greg.
Hello, hello, she calls as she heads up the stairs to her living space. But there's no response except for the sound of her heart pounding in her ears.
It's her brother Greg.
Allie picks up an umbrella, a terrible choice of weapons, but sometimes you gotta take what you can get. She rounds the corner into her kitchen, umbrella poised to attack, but no one is there.
Except her brother Greg.
She makes it into her living room and, oh my gosh, there's somebody in the chair. The chair turns around and...
I'm so sorry. When I first watched this the first time, I was like, it's her brother Greg. Why are they trying to build suspense? It's Greg. It's Greg, Allie. Allie, it's Greg. And in the chair was her brother. I'm sorry, Corinne, go ahead. Who was in the chair?
It's her brother Greg. I know this is going to surprise you. So... obviously, because Tamara worked in a portrait studio, she knows these things because of all her mystery-solving experience. But when Greg swivels around, she is relieved to see him, and he says to her, Allie, I fucked up big time. And she sits down ready to hear his confession. But Greg, the hunky firefighter, doesn't confess to a murder. He tells her how he ambushed Jenna at the engagement dinner. Well, in the parking lot before the engagement dinner. He tried to be discreet about it, but one of the groomsmen saw them. And now everybody knows. He just couldn't stop thinking about her. He always thought they'd find their way back to each other. Allie questions him. Where the fuck have you been? Greg says, I went to the cabin. I couldn't be around while Jenna was getting married. Allie is sympathetic. I totally get that, but have you talked to the police? Greg is puzzled. Why would I talk to the police? Allie responds, Kevin was murdered. And with that, we see Greg doing his civic duty and being interrogated at the police station. Does he have a lawyer? No.
Always get a lawyer.
Always get a lawyer. Berlin and the police chief. Always get a lawyer. Always get a lawyer. Lawyer.
Even if innocent.
Especially if innocent.
1,000% if you're innocent.
Because they will protect your ass.
Mm-hmm.
Detective Carlin and the police chief are double teaming him. Where were you the night of the murder?
What? Wait, what? What kind of movie is this?
I was inspired by that Luke McFarlane movie that I saw the preview for where he was getting double teamed on. Oh, hello. Okay. Where were you the night of the murder? Blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, they have to let him go because even though he doesn't have an alibi, they can tie him to the murder. They can't tie him to the murder.
I was going to say, no, they can't. Yeah, they can't.
Thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Oh, you
that.
Murdered somebody? Go ahead. Yeah, we'll call you in the next couple of days or so. Yeah, make sure you stay by your phone. Don't go anywhere or kill anybody.
Do you mind just turning in your gun? Because that could be a little bit problematic there. Yes.
Yeah. We need it for evidence. And also, we don't want you to shoot anybody else. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, we'll just take all your knives and cutlery, golf clubs, you know.
Too soon, Corinne. Oh, wait. You're talking about something.
Oh, shit. No, that's between us. Secrets.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Twitch. Twitch. Completely separate conversation that Corinne and I had before this call. Sorry. I included all of you guys with only half the information. I apologize, dear listeners.
Outside the interrogation room, Allie is waiting, and when she notices she's alone, she kind of sort of snoops at Detective Sam Acosta's desk. He walks in and she plays it off like she's getting coffee. He kindly hands her a real sugar packet, even though Allie takes her coffee black because the coffee is so bad, she's gonna need it. Allie sets down the coffee, making eye contact with Detective Sam Acosta. My brother didn't do it. He wasn't even there, she states. Sam looks at her. You sure about that, Miss Adams? Allie stares him down. It's Allie, and very sure. And who else are you looking at for this? But Detective Sam Acosta says he can't comment on an ongoing investigation. Allie sees Greg leaving, and she leaves the detective to talk to her brother. Once Allie catches up with him, she asks how it went. He says they told him not to leave town. Detective Carlin comes out of the interrogation room and asks Acosta what a six-letter word for not innocent is. He wants to peg the murder on Greg and do a tie-in to our last crossword puzzle mystery at the same time. Thanks, Detective Carlin.
What do you think Allie was looking for on Acosta's desk? That's one thing I was like, what do you think you're going to find there, honey?
I'd be hoping for the file so I could take pictures of the different reports and stuff.
Wouldn't that be illegal?
Yes.
Okay,
but
just checking.
Is like, should a person from off the street be snooping around on a police detective's desk?
Mm.
Yeah, so, you know.
But she's not just a street person. She's a photographer.
I don't know if you know that.
But yeah, yeah. And she has her own portrait studio, which makes her legit.
Yes. Tamara knows these things because she also had her own portrait studio. You're too legit to quit.
Too legit to quit. Hey, hey. Back at Picture Perfect Studio, Allie and Noah are setting up for a photo shoot, and Allie's bitching at him that they have the wrong person. Noah shrugs and says, well, he is the ex, and jealousy is the best motive for murder. Allie's incredulous. He wouldn't hurt a fly. But Noah's taking criminology and forensic science and knows that they have their sights on Greg and they're probably not going to waste their time looking for another suspect. Well, Allie thinks if the detectives aren't going to try to find the murderer and pin it on Greg, then her and Noah are just going to have to do it themselves.
Yeah!
They go straight to the lobby desk and pull out the laptop and look through all the wedding photos. It may not be a moita board. It may not be a moita board, but it'll work. They flip through the photos, and Noah says that there's over 100 people and it'll take them forever. Not really, Allie retorts. She pulls up a photo of the wedding party and says whoever shot Greg knew that the lights were going to go out during their dance, so they had to be there at the rehearsal dinner. Noah raises his hand sheepishly, and she looks at him. Yes? Wouldn't that include your brother? He asks, matter-of-factly. She gets to a photo of DJ Kenny Kwan, who's standing behind the groom, Kevin, and his father, who are having a heated argument. Noah admits that he didn't hear what they were arguing about, but they see that DJ Kenny Kwan is right in earshot and is looking at the exchange pointedly. So they go straight to Casa Kwan to ask him what was said between the groom and his father. They catch him setting up for his next gig, but he doesn't have enough time to answer a few questions while he's loading his car. Say, he looks at Noah, why don't you help out and I can focus on these questions more? Smooth, Kenny, smooth.
Uh-huh.
Noah looks reluctantly at Allie, who assures him, yeah, he'd be happy to help. So Noah winds up schlepping all the boxes into DJ Kenny's car while Allie asks about the conversation.
Noah gives her a look like, yeah. Thanks for throwing me under the bus.
Yeah.
Allie, thanks a lot.
Just because I'm your employee doesn't make me your bitch. Kenny heard part of the argument, and it was mostly around the rehearsal dinner. Wait, you said engagement dinner earlier. It was the rehearsal dinner.
Yeah, it should have been rehearsal dinner, but that's fine.
Okay, just thought I'd point it out. Allie spitballs that they were probably arguing about her brother showing up. Kenny changes gears smoothly, as smooth as a pine cone, and asks Allie if she'd like to go have dinner sometime. She says she's not looking for anyone right now, and he smoothly, as a pine cone, says, you don't have to look, I'm right in front of ya.
Hey, finger guns, finger guns, finger guns.
Yes, she says, tempting, but no. Just as Noah comes back, he's finished loading up the car and asks sarcastically, is there anything else I can do? DJ Kenny declines, but hands him his card saying, hey, if this photography thing doesn't work out, give me a call. Noah takes it gingerly and gives Allie a, are you fucking serious look? Kenny goes to leave, but before he closes the trunk of his car, he calls out, oh yeah, I remember one thing that was said. Kevin's father told him that the wedding will take place over his dead body. That's got to mean something, right? Question mark, question mark, question mark. So DJ Kenny Kwan, he gets some free labor, asks out the girl, and then tries to headhunt her employee to come work for him. Finger guns, finger guns, finger guns.
And Noah, if looks could talk, would say, fuck off.
Yeah, I would be very pissed at my employer if that happened. I'd be like, okay, first of all, we need to discuss what just occurred. And second of all, like, I might be taking up DJ Kenny Kwan on his offer. You know, consider shuffling boxes because you treated me not like a employee, but like a fucking, never mind. I'm not going to say the word.
Picture this. It's a high-rise building. It's really big, really shiny, lots of windows. And Detective Acosta is sitting inside that building in an empty office. He's there to talk to Kevin's sister, Sarah, the one who abruptly accused Greg of moidle at the wedding. When the detective and Sarah meet, he just wants to know about Kevin's mood. She said that he was super happy until the night of the reception dinner when Greg came in and ruined everything. But this time, instead of accusing Greg, she accuses Jenna, who she thinks was motivated by money in marrying Kevin. Kevin had recently been promoted to number 2 in their company. They build buildings. I'm guessing that meant that he was the big shit. Ha! Number 2? Get it? Get it? Oh! And if Kevin died, Jenna could stand to inherit a lot. So, you know, no reason to waste any time. Just kill him off before you have time to, like, do anything.
I'm not going to be sweltering in this marriage for 2 years so I can get all the alimony and money and half or whatever. I'm just going to kill him right at the reception after the first dance.
Yeah. Fortunately, whatever. She took out lots of life insurance on him. So, you know. Nothing.
And then how did
here.
She wind up shooting him when she was dancing right next to him?
So she had a little flower, and instead of water squirting out of it, it shot bullets.
Oh, wow. You're dangerous, Corinne.
I know.
I'm going to be watching you. Mm-hmm.
I just know all about the killing stuff. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm glad I made it this far, knowing you for over 40 years, because I know we've gotten into some heated arguments, and I'm not sure entirely if that was accurate, if I would still be alive right now.
No, no, no. I like to preserve you.
That doesn't sound creepy at all.
Look, if you notice me spraying a little veneer on you, just stay really still. It'll be fine.
Is that why every time I wake up from your house, I'm like incredibly stiff? And you're like, it's just the couch. It's a really bad couch. Well, why can't I bend my arms, Corinne? What's going on?
Look, we're just living in a Barbie world.
Yeah.
You're just
pay
a Barbie
no attention
girl.
To that formaldehyde next to the couch.
You're a Barbie girl in a Barbie world. You're fantastic, made of plastic. That's why you're having a hard time moving, see? Come on, Barbie, let's go party. Allie has got to get to the bottom of this mystery. So she goes back to Jenna's house and asks her about Kevin's dynamic with his dad. And now I must correct myself. Jenna was staying with her mom. She goes back to Jenna's. They don't make it clear until, like, way into the movie. So she goes back to Jenna's mom's house. And then I was like, oh, it makes so much more sense why her mom was like, oh, Allie's here. And I was like, why is there this other woman answering the door? Oh, okay. Now it all makes sense. It's her mom. And they're at her house.
That's a pivotal scene, Corinne. It's a pivotal scene. It's not.
Allie asks Jenna about Kevin's dynamic with his dad. Jenna said that the family wasn't happy about his relationship with her. She was a waitress and he was rich. Plus, when he got promoted to number 2, the big shit, he took it very seriously and started butting heads with people at the company. Kevin's dad blamed Jenna. Allie asks if any of the people Kevin was butting heads with were at the wedding. And there were some.
Ooh.
And now we're at the police station. Allie is talking with Detective Acosta. She's got suspects for him. Kevin's dad and Kevin's coworker Bill Cross, who he was having an ish with at work. Detective Acosta is not swayed, and Detective Carlin comes in saying that somebody saw a tall, broad-shouldered, sandy-haired guy leave the scene shortly after the shooting. And, just FYI, Allie's brother is tall, broad-shouldered, and sandy-haired. Thank you very much. Carlin says, sound familiar? Detective Acosta looks at Allie, his eyebrows raised. Sounds like Greg Adams. And with that, Allie leaves in a huff. In a huff!
Next time we see Allie, she's at a lavish house having a photo shoot for a luau party. There's a group of kids in front of her smiling tensely while her parents are behind Allie saying, smile bigger! Smile harder! Aren't we having fun? Allie takes photos again and again, but none seem to suit the parents.
No, the teens are not having fun.
That's why they need to be encouraged to smile harder! You need to look like you're enjoying yourself! I said enjoy yourself!
Mom, why you gotta be so embarrassing? Smiling hard! Smiling hard!
Finally, she gets a decent shot and asks where the caterer set up. She wants to take a picture of the cake. As she leaves, the dad turns to his wife and says, great idea, honey, hiring a professional photographer. And Mom looks back at him and says, but I didn't hire her. But Allie has already whisked away to the kitchen. There she finds Bev, who is catering Jenna and Kevin's wedding. And we can tell that Allie is there specifically to talk to Bev about the night of the wedding. Bev is kind of tired of talking about it and already told the police everything she knows. But yeah. Allie pleads, I'm doing my own investigation because I'm a photographer. I need to know what happened. Bev relents and tells her that she spilled wine on her shirt, went to her car to change it, and heard a loud crack. And then a tall man with sandy brown hair ran out. Allie takes out her phone and shows her a picture of her brother. Was it him? She asks. But Bev shakes her head. I don't know. It was dark and he was running really fast. Just then, the parents of the birthday girl come in and say tersely, neither my husband or I hired you, Allie. She does some quick thinking and says, oh, I'm sorry. I thought the office would tell you. There's a free photographer with every cake purchase. Allie looks at Bev for backup. I guess so, Bev says, with thinly veiled cheer. The mother accepts this, goes into the living room, but says, oh, and we're ready for the cake now. Once she's gone, Bev pleads with Allie, can you please leave so I don't get into trouble? Allie agrees, but asks before she goes, did anyone see the person that ran out? Bev nods, yeah, the florist, May. And we know exactly where Allie's going next.
Ooh.
To the bakery to get some donuts.
I want some donuts. I've been wanting some donuts real bad.
I know. I think that's why it crept into my story. She doesn't go to the bakery. She goes to May's. Allie beelines it to May's flower shop, and there she finds Detective Acosta standing at the counter. They greet each other coolly and question why the other one's there. Allie says she might just be looking for flowers, as May comes out and shoves a huge planter full of succulents into the detective's hands. A housewarming gift, she proclaims. He tries to give it back. I don't have a green thumb, and I can't accept this. But May encourages him. Succulents are very low maintenance and brighten up any room. He takes it reluctantly, and Allie asks, Bev said you were outside the night Kevin got shot. I was, she said, but I didn't see anything. However, I do know that your brother is innocent, she says very matter-of-factly. Both Allie and the detective both say, you do? At the same time. Yes, May explains. Everyone thinks that Greg killed Kevin out of jealousy, but he was in here a few weeks ago prior to that buying red roses, and he seemed very happy. The phone rings, and she excuses herself to answer it. Allie races out of the store, and Detective Acosta's hot on her heels. He asks why she seems so upset, and she explains that she didn't know he was seeing anybody, and her and her brother used to tell each other everything. Maybe, the detective muses, the flowers were for an old love, not a new one. Maybe he was just trying to win Jenna back before he showed up at the rehearsal dinner. Allie quietly ponders this before Detective Acosta shoves a planter of succulents into her hand. Take this. She refuses. She can't accept this, but he insists. If it stays with me, it'll be dead in a week. They have a few passes of planter hot potato before she shoves it back at him and says, it was a gift, put it in the sun, rotate it frequently, and you'll be fine, and walks away with a smirk on her face.
Allie gets a call from Greg. He needs her help, and she immediately rushes over to his house, which has a bunch of police cars parked in front.
Ruh-roh.
Greg is on the stoop, flustered, and tells Allie that they're searching his house. Allie assures him, "Don't worry, this is a good thing." Detective Sam Acosta comes out. "A good thing? How do you figure that?" Allie retorts, "Because you aren't going to find anything." However, no sooner have those words left her mouth than Detective Carlin comes out holding a Beretta 84. That's a handgun, y'all, in an evidence bag.
If somebody said Beretta 84 to me, I'd be like, okay, sounds like a gun, but I wouldn't be able to tell you what kind of gun.
Beretta 84, weren't there a hairband, like a metal hairband in the 80s? Beretta,
yes. Beretta 84? They used Aquanaut Extra Super Hold.
Mm-hmm, and put their makeup on better than I did.
Yes. I love the way they wore pearls around their necks. Just really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Beretta 84 that was in an evidence bag is the same type of gun that was used to kill Kevin. Greg is read his rights and taken away in handcuffs as Allie says under her breath, "He didn't do it." At Picture Perfect Studios, Sarah, a.k.a. sister of Kevin, a.k.a. disgruntled bridesmaid.
She wears many hats.
Approaches Noah, who is studying at the front desk. "Can I have the pictures from the wedding? The ones with my side of the family?" Noah says he'll get those uploaded right away. Sarah stares at him. Noah continues, "And we'll be happy to send some prints to you as well." Sarah smiles slightly and stares at Noah some more. He asks, "Is there anything else I can help you with?" She pauses, then replies, "I was just wondering if Jenna has requested any photos." Noah is puzzled, but responds, "No, I don't think she has." Sarah rolls her eyes. "I'm not surprised." And with that, she leaves, and Noah shakes his head at the whole thing and opens his laptop to get to work on her photos. In a scene where Jenna is being questioned by Detective Acosta, it is revealed that she had been having regular phone calls with Greg. But it's not like that. He was her friend and was helping her through a hard time, but she never questioned going through with the wedding. Allie bails her brother out, and he is grateful, telling her he'll pay her back. But Allie pish-poshes this. What she really cares about is that he's honest with her, that he tells her everything. Greg looks sincerely into her eyes. "That gun was Dad's, and I've never even used it. I've told you everything, I promise." "But have you, Greg? Have you?" Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Mm-hmm.
"I'm suspicious. Mm-hmm. I'm suspicious." Meanwhile, Maya, Allie's actress friend, goes back to the Davis architecture firm in the big, shiny high-rise with lots of windows. She has an appointment.
I don't think we've mentioned Maya before because we cut all her parts because they were insignificant. Maya's Allie's best actress friend, but Corinne already said that.
Yes, I did.
But just like, who's this girl that walks in and just starts like sleuthing on Allie's behalf? She was here. We just cut her out because her parts were dumb.
Yeah, because this is going to be long enough as it is. Oh, the notes took me forever for this cursed movie. But fortunately, it really paid off because of the sexual tension between Allie and Detective Acosta. Let me tell you, it was snap,
sure,
crackling and popping over there.
Haven't seen any tension yet. Like, he handed her the sugar packet very seductively, I guess.
"You're gonna need this. The coffee's horrible." It's not every day that somebody tries to give you a giant bowl of succulents. I put the suck in succulents. Maya has an appointment with Bill Cross, and they are looking at blueprints of land. Bill is impressed. "This is a large plot of land." And Maya, playing the heiress, says, "The land belonged to my daddy, who recently passed." Bill offers her his condolences, passes her a tissue, and asks, "So what do you intend to do with this land?" An oh shit look passes over her face.
Well, you're a developer. I plan to develop it."
Bill has heard enough, takes out his iPad, types in his code, which Maya notes, and says, "Does April 16th work?" Just then, Maya feigns a cough. and asks for some water. When he leaves to get it, she gets his tablet and takes a photo of his calendar and then hustles the fuck out of there and meets up with Allie to share that Bill had regular appointments at the firing range. Dun, 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 dun. Suspicious.
Scooby-Doo powers activate!
Woo!
Maya and Allie convene at Picture Perfect Studios, a.k.a. the Investigation Hub. Allie's complaining that it took all morning to bail her brother out when Noah sees them coming and rushes out to meet them. He has a folder in his hand that has Jenna's initial wedding consultation, and he shows it to the two ladies. In the initial consultation, they were supposed to be 4 bridesmaids and 4 groomsmen. Noah pulls out the photographs of the actual ceremony and shows everyone that there are 4 bridesmaids and only 3 groomsmen. Where's the 4th groomsman? Where is he? Allie wonders if he could be linked to the Moira.
Oh, I was wondering if he got killed off.
Oh. I'm sure Allie wasn't thinking that. Well, I mean, maybe he's dead because if Greg can kill Kevin, why not the groomsmen too? Like, yeah. Fuck it. I mean, if you're going to kill one person, how hard is it to kill two, honestly?
Exactly. You know, it just it just gets easier every time with experience, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, because you're the pro with the weapons. You would know, I guess.
Yeah. Like all my Beretta experience. I wear them in my hair all the time. I like the really cute ones with sparkles.
You have like the pom-pom ponytails with like Berettas holding them in place. That's like hot. And then you could like pull them out and shoot people.
Ooh, that's so Kill Bill.
Oh yeah, a la Kill Bill, exactly. You can just like doom, pull them out of your hair. And then your hair falls, like, majestically around your shoulders and it's perfectly coiffed.
Ah, oh, that's not surprising for my hair.
Shut up.
It's so true. Are you kidding me? I need a haircut. This is like, ugh, my hair right now.
Mm. Allie immediately calls Jenna and asks about the absence of the 4th groomsman. Jenna explains that it was Kevin's brother. Or rather, fraternity brother, actually. He flew out for the wedding but got a stomach bug the day before. That's odd, Allie observes, that he flew all the way out here for the wedding and then missed it. He was very sick, Jenna explains. He wouldn't have missed it for the world, but he didn't want to get anybody else sick during the ceremony. Allie thanks her and gets off the phone and says, well, that was a dead end. Was it, though? Noah asks. He has his computer out and flips the screen around so the screen faces Allie and says, meet Brandon Styles, he says as he produces the photos on his screen, and Brandon looks eerily like Allie's brother Greg. What, huh? Ooh, huh?
Ooh.
Back at Detective Acosta's casa. He's new in town, and since he moved from New York, he decided to buy an old house in the area and fix it up. And Allie makes an unannounced visit, knocks on the door while he is under the sink fixing pipes. He looks less than thrilled to see her at his front door, but lets her in when she asks to come. Well, that's not a good sign.
Lets her in when she asks to come. Great. Oh, hey there.
That's sexual tension we were talking about.
Are you going to make me come?
She opens the door.
Detective.
Can I come in?
You know, I'm really good at fixing pipes. Are you going to name them? Oh, yeah.
We've been on the dating apps far too long, apparently.
Ugh, that's my big dating app question. Whenever I see a guy who has his occupation as pipe fitter, I'm like, is he being euphemistic or is he actually being literal?
Ooh. Allie comes in and insults the detective's casual attire. She thinks he's so buttoned up that he would wear a suit even on his day off. Once she walks in, she notices that the succulents are still alive, and Acosta agrees that he's not super hopeless at keeping plants alive after all. So, Allie demands, and the detective rocks back on his feet a little bit, not understanding what she's asking for. I think there's supposed to be some tension between them, but it quickly fizzles when she says, a tour! Show me around this place! The detective does, and he has lofty dreams for his new home, and Jenna asks if he needs some referrals for handymen. But nope, he's gonna do it all himself. Just as he tries to open up the door and rips off the doorknob. As they continue the tour, she asks how a New York detective wound up in the small little town of Willow Haven. And he asks if she's checking up on him. Of course she is. She has the hots for him. The detective tells her he needed a change and New York had too many memories. Good or bad, she asks, but he ignores the question and continues saying that he was doing an investigation in the area, saw this house for sale, and on impulse bought it and relocated. Allie finds it hard to believe, but he gets all sentimental as he looks out the window. It was the first impulsive thing I ever did. Something about the way the light hit behind the house, and I knew that this place was full of possibilities. That was supposed to be Detective Acosta's deep moment.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. I moved deeply. Super deep.
Sure. Okay. Allie looks around the room that they're standing in and says, must be paint possibilities, because this house is full of mustard paint. He chuckles, and when he turns around, he sees Allie has spied his chessboard. The game that he plays via mail with his Uncle Luis is being scrutinized by her. She looks at his pieces and advises him to move his knight to this square. And he says, no way, that'll open me up. Allie nods and says, yes, but it's a sacrifice, because in three moves, it's checkmate. I like puzzle games, she admits when he looks at her quizzically. He stands up abruptly and says, which makes me wonder why you're doing here. Nobody drives out this far to talk about spackle. Allie admits that she does have an ulterior motive and tells the detective about Brandon and how much he looks like her brother and how the groom was arguing loudly with somebody on the phone saying, don't come here today. Coincidence? She thinks not. But Detective Acosta is not convinced. He says there's one person with the motive and the ability to murder, and that's who they're looking for. Even though I appreciate your tenacity that you're trying to clear your brother's name, we're going after Greg. Allie, disappointed, turns tail and shows herself out. The detective looks out the window forlornly as she drives away, then goes to the chessboard and moves his piece to the exact spot that she recommended.
Ooh. Also, just FYI, in future episodes, he's not in this one, but Uncle Luis is Eric Estrada from the 80s television show Chips.
I saw him when I was looking at the Picture Perfect Mystery as on IMDb. I was like, Eric Estrada? Where's Eric Estrada? Did I blink?
No. You're just not you haven't watched the next movie.
Got it.
He was also in Dos Mujeres, Un Camino.
Un Camino.
Yes!
Which I also never saw.
Gotta love that telenovela action.
A little later, Greg is on the city street looking into a cafe when he sees Jenna and a group of friends meeting. The waitress comes out and asks if he'd like to come in, but no, he's just being a creepy stalker and declines. Just then his phone rings, and it's the fire chief telling him he's been suspended indefinitely due to the accusations. He goes to his sister's photography studio and cries on her shoulder, it's not fair! It's not fair! The firehouse is like a family to him, and he can't lose his job! Greg asks how Jenna's doing, and Allie assures him that she's coping. She's mourning, but she's strong, and she'll get through this. Greg sighs and says, I wish there's something I could do to help her. But Allie recommends that he just give her time and space, at least for now.
And stop being a creepy stalker towards her, Greg, because that's a little creepy. I think it was supposed to be, like, sweet, but I was just like, no, not sweet.
There's nothing sweet about that. Like, what's he going to do? Go up and be like, hey, Jenna, I heard your husband got murdered, so that must mean you're single, right? Winky, winky.
You available now?
How long is standard for mourning? When should I come back?
Every step you take, every breath you make, I'll be watching you, Jenna. I'll be watching you.
Back at the police station, the chief, Acosta, and Carlin get the ballistics report for Greg's gun, and they realize it hasn't been fired in a really, really long time. Acosta recommends to open up the guest book and have a look at the other attendees at the ceremony, but Carlin is resolute. He is sure they have the right man, even though they may not have the right murder weapon. He walks away with conviction, but after he leaves, the chief leans into Acosta and says, open up the investigation, meaning she's gonna go talk to other people. And it might not be Greg that gets pinned for this crime.
Ooh, an open investigation, just like an open marriage. I mean, Hallmark, you're getting so alternative on us. I can't even.
What?
Seeing other people.
Where was the open marriage? When did that happen? What episode was that?
No, I'm just saying, like, they're not just keeping their focus on one person. They decided to open things up and see multiple people. In their investigation.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Yep. I could see how you made that correlation. Cannot. I'm shaking my head.
It totally landed. It was perfect. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
Detectives Acosta and Carlin are on the case, looking at other leads now, being
polyamorous in their investigation. The talk.
They talk to Kevin's dad, who despises Jenna and blames her for his son talking of leaving the company. Says Jenna didn't love him and basically blames Jenna for everything.
Jenna.
I know. I'm pretty sure that she's also responsible for all the wars in the world and global warming. Detective Acosta tries shifting the topic. Did Kevin come to you with any concerns about your business? Pa Davis is pissed at the accusations of impropriety, but interrupted by the funeral home calling him. When he steps out to take the call, Detective Carlin is pissed that Acosta hadn't clued him in on the whole something fishy is going down at the company angle. Acosta absentmindedly apologizes. He's still getting used to working with a partner and wanders over to a display case in the living room. In it are handguns, the perfect place to keep your guns, in an easily accessible glass case. But one of them is missing. It's a mystery.
No, it's not, because they had a stupid little sign right there that said 84 Beretta used to sit here in this spot, but it's gone now, in case you didn't notice. And if you did, there's a sign next to it that says 84 Beretta was here.
A little neon arrow with like flashing, being like, meep, meep, meep. It's a clue. Tam is right. Literally, there was a piece of paper label underneath it and then an empty space where the gun should be.
Ooh. Allie located the motel that Brandon Stiles was staying at, but when she knocks on the door with a thermos of chicken soup and a cheery housekeeping, nobody answers. So she has no choice but to do a stakeout and wait for him to return. Obviously.
Yeah, that was not a well thought out plan. I'm going to be housekeeping with chicken soup. It's a surprise. You open the door and I'm not housekeeping. And this soup's not for you. It's actually my lunch. But I have some questions for you.
Hopefully, Brandon will be alone and not with a Tinder date.
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's just in town for a few days. He's just looking to have a little bit of fun. While she's on her stakeout, she orders some Thai delivery and posts up in her Mini Cooper, happily munching away and keeping an eye on his room. But her party of one is interrupted when there's a knock on the window. It's Detective Acosta asking her what she's up to. Allie turns on her Bambi eyes. I was just driving along when suddenly I got a phone call and I pulled over to be safe. Detective Acosta doesn't believe her, asks her if she's eating Thai food, and invites himself into her car to munch on her food, and they chat.
That's good. What?
Perhaps their steamy first date? Do you feel like the tension between them, like the heart eyes going on? Like, we've already mentioned heart eyes so many times between the two of them.
Did we? I don't recall that.
Well, when like thousands of heart eyes is divisible by zero, then that's how we got it.
I recall laying pipe. I recall.
Let's see. Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, no heart eyes have been mentioned in regards to the two of them. But perhaps they will. We still have more movie left to go.
Allie lets Detective Sam Acosta know that when she was a senior in high school, Greg had a scholarship to college, but after their parents died, he gave that up and came back home to take care of her. And now it's her turn to take care of him. She's looking out for her big bro, yo. She asks him if he misses New York, and he replies, "Sometimes. I think I'm just looking for a sign that makes Willow Haven feel like home." Allie assures him, "Just give it some time. I'm sure it will." Just then, a car pulls up, and it's Brandon. He heads out of his car and up to his room. Allie's snapping pictures the entire time. Not exactly sure why, but you know, she's a detective. Does he look weak and racked with illness? Nope, looks perfectly healthy. Suspicious! Turns out that Brandon's ailment is not having a 24-hour flu, but is being a dick. When he is pulled into the station for questioning with Detective Acosta and Carlin, it turns out the reason why he was uninvited from the wedding is because he told Kevin that he should postpone the wedding. Jenna was obviously up to no good and definitely after his money. It was all so obvious because Jenna's ex showed up before the wedding, something Jenna definitely had control over, right? Right?
No. Nope.
Kevin gave him the big old fuck off after that unsupportive commentary, but Brandon is innocent. He is just looking out for his boy. Look, he says, I'm not the only one who felt that way. Kevin's dad said he'd disown Kevin if he got married. Brandon clarifies that he did go to the wedding to try and make up with Kevin, but he chickened out and left. Detective Acosta has something up his sleeve. Are you sure you weren't mad over the job that Kevin extended to you and then took back? Brandon looks surprised. How'd you know about that? Detective Acosta says, I'm a detective. Brandon explains, no. He was doing me a favor by rescinding the job offer. He was seriously looking at leaving the company. It turns out he unearthed some discrepancies in the company's accounting, like missing money, a lot of it. The two detectives look at each other. Identical thought bubbles pop up over their heads. Motive? They say.
Motive. Back at the Picture Perfect Studios, which sounded exciting the first four times I opened with that, because they keep going back to the Picture Perfect Studio. Allie and Greg are contemplating their next move. They need to lawyer him up real quick. Noah offers his uncle services. Who's a lawyer? Criminal defense? Allie asks, and Noah shakes his head. Nope. Environmental law. Thanks, but no thanks, Noah. They're just going to look in the phone book. As they're about to do that, Jenna walks into the studio and sees Greg and tries to walk right back out, but he stops her and tells her, I had absolutely nothing to do with Kevin's death, and she needs to know that. She seems hesitant, and Allie intervenes and asks if she's okay, and Jenna deflates. No, I can't stay at my mom's one more minute, and I can't go back to my apartment because everything there reminds me of Kevin. Allie offers to let her stay at her house, a slumber party, but Greg has a better idea. Or you can go to our family's cabin. It's quiet, it's peaceful, and you could stay there as long as you like and clear your head.
Plus, I can look through the windows at you while you do, because everything's on the first floor.
I'll know exactly where you are. Go ahead, Jenna, go to that cabin. It'll be nice and quiet. You'll be all alone.
Very private. Very private.
But Jenna likes the idea and breathes a quiet thank you as he hands her the key. And he asks if she remembers how to get there. And she does. And he says, great, if you get lost, I'll be right behind you because I'll be following you the whole way. Then we see Detective Acosta going back to the Davis's family's firm. He sits in the lobby until he sees Bill Cross walking and talking on his cell phone and stops him. Normally he speaks to Sarah, but today the detective is looking for Bill. He pauses confused, puts his phone down, and asks how he can help. Detective Acosta tells him that Sarah's been very helpful with the guest lists and information, and even gave him access to Kevin's laptop, which had questionable financial information. Bill scoffs. Kevin never had a good head for money. Really, the detective says, because it looks like there was a lot missing that would indicate embezzlement. But that's it. The magic words have been said, and Bill Cross lawyers up. He will not answer any more questions without his attorney. Even though he is a criminal, he has the right idea. Lawyer up, lawyer up, lawyer up. Meanwhile, back at the Picture Perfect Studios. Noah informs Allie that their tripod was at the hall where the wedding took place. She's thrilled that it turned up and will pick it up on the way to bringing the wedding photos to Sarah Davis. Noah suggests that she gets them curried over, but she refuses. She has some questions and insists on doing it herself. She's hoping that the pictures will be like extending an olive branch. She leaves with high hopes, and Noah sings after her, good luck, you're gonna need it. She goes to the hall for the tripod. The place is completely empty except for Detective Acosta. Again! I know it's a small town, but really?
Is this love that I'm feeling? Is this the love that I've been looking for?
No. No, it's not. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Detective Acosta's perusing the wall in the other room. He sees her and asks if she's being nosy, and she's a little chuffed. Nope, not being nosy, just here to pick up my tripod. But since I'm here, he finishes the sentence, you're deciding to be nosy. She raises her voice. You get to be nosy every day. You get to be nosy as a profession. Emphasis on profession, he says. But before she can go off again, he adds, I think you're right. I don't think that Greg is our guy. And her face softens. You don't? No, he says, something just doesn't add up, and I wanted to come to the space with fresh eyes to see if I could figure out what. Sometimes the more important things in a photograph is what we leave out, not what we leave in. He doesn't follow because that doesn't make any fucking sense. And she says, focus on the thing that's tripping you up, which doesn't seem like great advice. She goes to leave and he asks her to stay to help him, air quotes. She argues that she's told him everything that she knows and he says, no, I need you to show me. He ushers her into the empty ballroom and asks her to walk him through the last dance step by step. He holds out his hand and they must recreate the dance for him to get the full experience. They slowly twirl around and she tells him that they were standing here. And then they did this. And then he dipped her. So Acosta dips Allie and looks at the angles, trying to make all the connections in his head, and then realizes he's still dipping her. He looks down and they lock eyes. And there's a moment of something. Is it hearts in the eyes?
Oh, is it?
I think it's supposed to be, but it's not like pops hearts in the eyes. It's like,
yeah.
It was so kind of like they were trying to, I think, be subdued in their passions, and it just came out a little muted. I think they could have gone a little bit further, had a little more tension, had a little more lingering looks or something, but that little moment was supposed to be the sexy bit of it, and yeah. I was just like,
There was no sizzling. There was no, like, there have been multiple Hallmark movies where I've watched, and like, they look at each other, and I'm like, oh!
Yeah.
And this was definitely not one of those movies.
Yeah, I think it's a new word. Instead of the sizzle with the Z, it's the sizzle with an S. It's not quite there.
Yeah,
it was just sizzle. It wasn't sizzle. It was sizzle.
Yeah, no, it's just.
There's a moment of something. Sizzle. He writes her back up and thanks her profusely for her help. She nervously accepts and says, oh, I'm so glad I could be here, and then quickly leaves. But there is a lingering glance before they part ways, chock full of Cecil.
Cecil. Later, Detective Acosta and the captain are on the other side of a two-way mirror looking at Detective Carlin. Question Bill Cross, who is the only person in the movie who is wise enough to lawyer up, as Tamara pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, fucking Brandon? No lawyer. We're not worried about Jenna because she was there. Fucking Greg, no lawyer. I'm like, come on, people. Get your lawyer on. Get your lawyer on. Get your lawyer on. While Bill Cross threatens to sue the police department at the embezzlement accusations, Detective Acosta tells the captain that Kevin was gathering evidence that proved Cross had been embezzling hundreds of thousands of dollars from clients and the firm.
That's a shitty insinuation they made just there. It is a shitty insinuation. You only lawyer up if you're guilty and have something to hide. If you're perfectly innocent in this movie, you don't need a lawyer because the police are out to help you.
Huh? Winky, winky.
Winky, winky.
Yeah, no. I totally agree with you. I was like, oh, so what you're saying is, you're insinuating is, if you're guilty, that's when you need a lawyer. No.
Right.
If you're innocent, you need a lawyer too.
I would like to know how many people, honestly, like legit question, that have been wrongfully convicted, lawyered up from the get-go.
Yeah.
I think the number would be pretty low.
Yeah. A lot of them are also just on, because they didn't lawyer up, they question them for like way longer than they should, and they end up giving confessions just to get out of the room. And and I'm like, oh, that's just rough.
They was the most recent episode of Let's Go to Court had two wrongful convictions of people that did not lawyer up, and there was gross negligence in their cases to where the people that were trying to prosecute them were like, we don't give a fuck if there's all this evidence that points against them being the criminal. We're going to persevere and push ahead. So I'm like, if somebody was actually there from the get-go to have their back, like, how likely would that have happened?
Yeah.
It's definitely, like, probably helpful more than a hindrance.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Particularly in that early stage when you're just, you know, being questioned, having somebody look out for you and make sure that, like, the police aren't keeping you there for, like, 20 hours.
Or,
yeah, exactly. Detective Acosta tells the captain that Kevin was gathering evidence that proved Cross had been embezzling hundreds and thousands of dollars from clients of and the firm. It's unclear if Cross knew, but if he did, it's unclear if Cross knew. No, Cross knew he was embezzling hundreds and thousands of dollars.
Did I accidentally embezzle money? Shit, I hate when that happens.
I hate it when that happens. I like wake up and I'm on this bed pile full of money and I'm like, how did this get here? I don't know. It's unclear if Cross knew that Kevin knew that he was embezzling the money. Yes.
Okay. Following.
But if he did, that, gentle listeners, is what we call a solid motive. Although I'd personally, if I were Cross, just jump on my private jet to some place where I could live out the rest of my days with all the money I stole on some, like, beachy place and drinking, not pina coladas, but, like, margaritas or something. Margs, if you will.
Hate you.
Allie goes back to the architecture firm. The big, shiny, tall, windowed building, and says,
what is up with you in this building, Corinne? It's so big and shiny and phallic.
Look, everything around them is like small town, very suburban. And then there's this magic, like, skyscraper building in the middle of everything. And it's like, where did that fucking come from? It doesn't even make sense.
Okay, I agree with you.
And says that she's got pictures for Sarah Davis, is she in? The receptionist confirms and starts to take the pictures, but Allie has an iron grip on them. The receptionist says, I can take those. Allie protests, oh no, it's no problem for me. The receptionist interrupts, I should really take those, pulling the envelope towards her, but Allie will not be deterred. No, she's a friend. I'll take them. Thanks. And she yoinks the envelope out of the receptionist's hand and walks towards Sarah's office while the receptionist tightly smiles. Girl, I have been there. Ugh.
I have a theory about the big shiny building.
Oh, do tell.
So the Davises are developers and they're architects. And this is their building and it's their company. So they wanted to make the biggest, shiniest building in all of Whitehaven or wherever the fuck they are. That's why this big monstrosity is amongst the small podunk town, standing like a big beacon, because Pa Davis probably sat down when he was building his lowly little architecture firm and said, we're going to make this the penis of the town. It's going to be big and it's going to be shiny and it's going to be erect and cast a shadow over everything underneath it.
The penis of the town. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Shiny, erect, and thick. And firm.
Yep.
Nice.
That's my theory and I'm sticking to it.
I like it. I'm on board with your theory and I'm sure that a giant lady would want to ride that like a pony. Once Allie gets to Sarah's office, she's greeted by Sarah with, Allie, what are you doing here? Allie smoothly says, I wanted to drop the photos off for you. Sarah, irritated, replies, you could have left them at reception. But Allie pretends like she got the warmest welcome from Sarah. Oh, I knew how important it was to you to get these photos, and I wanted to make sure that you did. Sarah grumpily looks at her and pulls the pics out of the envelope. Thanks. She looks at the pictures of Kevin, smiling in a tux, and Sarah's gaze softens. He's wearing my grandpa's bow tie. That's why it's so big. She smiles fondly. Sarah apologizes, too, to Allie for being awful to her the day of the wedding and says, I owe Jenna an apology, too. I tried seeing her this morning at her mom's place, but she wasn't there. Allie smiles warmly back at Sarah. That's because Jenna's staying at my family's cabin. Sarah smiles bigger. Oh, that sounds nice. I think we could all use a little space right now. Allie slips in. I was wondering if I could ask you some questions about Bill Cross. Sarah doesn't have much to say, but regardless, she's interrupted by the receptionist calling her out to the lobby to sign for a package. When she leaves, Allie takes the opportunity to snoop a little, and there on Sarah's desk is a card from a florist. Inside is a note that says, Thinking of you, - Greg. What in the ever-loving fuck?
her brother and Sarah are an item? Question mark, question mark, question mark. So Allie does what any detective photographer sister would do. She hops in her Mini Cooper and drives up to her brother's place. And when he comes out of the house, she shakes her fist at the sky and says, "Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal."
Trail, trail, trail.
Greg is confused. "What are you talking about?" Allie says, "You lied to me. The florist says you sent flowers to someone. I assumed it was Jenna, but it was Sarah?" Greg is still confused. "And I'm beginning to wonder how he got a scholarship to college." He says, "No big deal. Me and Sarah dated for a while, but a few weeks ago I realized my heart wasn't in it, so I broke up with her." Allie asks, "How did she take it?" He replies, "Not well." And the scene fades out.
Back at Picture Perfect Studios, bee-dee-dee-dee, Allie. I gotta say that a little more enthusiastic, don't I? Back at Picture Perfect Studios, bee-dee-dee-dee. Allie and Noah look over the photographs to check the angles. Allie pulls up the photograph before Kevin was shot and realizes that Sarah was standing right by where the bullet would have come from. Noah asks why she would shoot her own brother, and Allie doesn't know. Or does she? Ooh. Kevin wasn't the target. She was trying to get rid of Jenna. Next, we see Jenna peacefully at the cabin stoking a fire. There's a knock on the door, and it's Sarah. She tells her that they've gotten some horrible news about Kevin and asks to come inside. As the door closes, we see Allie trying to call Jenna frantically, but the calls keep going to voicemail. She grabs her bag and keys and hollers to Noah. She's going to call Detective Acosta to meet her at the cabin, and Noah email him the directions. Noah asks if that's a good idea, and Allie says no, but does it anyways. She calls the detective while she's in the car and explains that Jenna's in trouble. She's at Allie's family's cabin, and Noah's sending him directions. The detective yells at her, "Let us take care of it!" But she doesn't listen because she's a photographer and she can handle anything.
Yes, we all know that Tamara can too.
Mm-hmm. Just wasn't given the chance. Not enough mysteries fell my way, sadly. She gets to the cabin lickety-split and frantically knocks on the door, and Jenna answers. "What's wrong?" she asks. "I'll explain to you. You in danger, girl." But Jenna's confused. Until Sarah peeks out from behind her with a gun in her hand and says, "She means me. I think you need to join us in here, Allie." And she motions for the two ladies to come inside the cabin. As they're inside, the detectives are racing to the scene. Sarah stands in front of Allie and Jenna and confesses that she was in love with Greg. And when he broke it off a few weeks ago, he said it was because he wasn't in a good place for a relationship. But then she saw him crash the rehearsal dinner and she knew that he was a liar. And Jenna was a liar. And even though Sarah pulled the trigger, Jenna's the one that killed her brother. Just then they hear sirens outside. Sarah goes to the window, peeks out, and sees a police car racing up the driveway. She says over her shoulder, "Get up! We're going out the back!" But Allie's right there with the fireplace poker and bashes her in the head! Or tries to, because next we see the lady struggling over the metal rod while the police break down the door. But the situation is handled. Okay. Allie has Sarah on the floor. What?
So they knock on the door, and he says, "Police!" And then Detective Acosta kicks in the door, and I'm like, "Could you try the handle? Because I'm sure the door's unlocked. It's a fucking cabin out in the middle of nowhere. You know they didn't lock the fucking door."
Oh, the police don't try the doorknobs. And what was the other morning show mysteries where she just got into every goddamn house she tried?
With her,
"I'm coming in!"
Shoulder.
With her magic shoulder.
Yeah.
See? Detective Acosta didn't know about that magic shoulder. He could have popped that door open without having to hurt himself.
I know.
Shame. They need to listen to this show. Anyways.
Mm-hmm. Obviously.
But Allie has the situation handled. Sarah's on the floor, and Allie greets the detectives cheerily as they enter. Acosta greets her back, and their nostrils flare at each other with the tension and the endorphins they have. They're both very aroused by the circumstances. At least I think that's what they were trying to convey. As the police are taking away Sarah, Acosta chastises Allie for putting herself in danger, and she thanks him for having her back. "Thanks for having my back, detective." And now she wants to give him her front too, but nothing happens. Ooh. Boo.
And now is the moment y'all have been waiting for. That moment between Allie and detective.
Have we? Did we? Are we?
Detective Sam Acosta, when it's just the two of them and they no longer have the implications of the case hanging over them, will they kiss?
Nope.
Let's see, Allie.
Oh, sorry. I don't nope.
Oh, ye of little faith, Allie knocks on his door.
Now Tamara's just mouthing nope at me.
She's got a package for him. Winky, winky.
He stands in his door frame and doesn't invite her in. Huh, that's not sexy or flirtatious.
She says, the other night you said you were looking for a sign that this is the place for you. Well, maybe this will help. She does not open her trench coat to reveal that she's completely naked underneath. Instead, she shoves a large rectangular package into his hands.
All the things that would have made this scene so much better, you just keep dangling in front of her. You don't get this. You don't get this. You don't. This doesn't happen. He should have let her in. She should have been naked under the trench coat, but nope. She hands him a package, but it's not the package you think.
So, speaking of the package you think... She shoves the large rectangular package into his hands, and then she leaves. Okay, maybe it's like the time that my family went away on vacation and my dad's coworker house sat at our place. And when we got back, we noticed he'd left a large framed photograph of his girlfriend posed sexy in a negligee on a motorcycle.
What the fuck? Are you serious?
I'm very serious.
No.
He brought his own art.
To what? Spank to? He's like, there's not enough hot reading material at the Edding house. I think I'm going to have to bring this big picture with me.
It was hanging on the wall of the living room.
Oh, hell no.
And as someone who house sits, I have to say, well, I have brought clothing places and sheets, sometimes laundry, sometimes bedding, maybe something to entertain myself with, like a notebook or, you know, something to read, whatever. I have never taken art or sexy photos to hang on the walls of any of the houses I've stayed at.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Detective Sam Acosta unwraps the package, and it's not a picture of Allie dressed in a sexy negligee posed on a motorcycle. Instead,
darn.
I know you're shocked.
Yet another thing that would have made this scene so much better that we don't get.
Not that you're bitter or anything. No, not at all.
Nope. You're almost done. I'm very thrilled.
It's a picture of his house. Is there a beautiful sunrise or sunset going on in it?
No.
No. It's just a black and white photo of it with some branches in the frame. Detective Sam Acosta smiles softly and puts it up on his wall because there's nothing quite like having a picture of the house you live inside the house you live.
That's very meta.
So meta. And thus, we close on the driest month of ODK ever. No kisses, not even dry ones. So much sadness. The end. So... what did you think of this movie, Tam?
This movie that doesn't go out with a bang, it goes out with a sizzle.
Sizzle.
You even got to get spit in the back of your throat to, like, put out the fire. Sizzle. I give this 2.5 dry kisses because the premise of the movie was a little bit far-fetched, to say the least. I'm so jealous of Jenna that I'm gonna shoot her at the wedding reception, not wait until she's alone and I will very likely get away with it because nobody suspects me. I'm gonna do it in a room full of my family and friends and really hope nobody's looking at me when it happens. Oh great, it worked. Fabulous. So the premise was a little ridiculous. It was very predictable, except I did not see that it was Sarah. I have to give them that. Like, Sarah was not the one that I was like, oh, shit. So that was a surprise. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the places in the movie that they were trying to build tension were just not there. Like, Greg being in Allie's house. It's Greg. Acosta and Allie having those steamy moments where they're supposed to be, like, interacting with each other. Like, I wanted to feel the heat. I wanted the cameras to be, like, fogging up with the steam from their genitalia, like, wanting to be together because we have been together. We've actually had sex. Let me show you what it looks like, minus all the, you know, sex. But it was not. It was just, it wasn't the performance I thought I was going to see, and I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, I was fully expecting them to make like soft love eyes at each other.
Yeah.
And they're really...
They did make soft love eyes, if you mean love soft, like, well, they did make soft love eyes if soft is like a flaccid penis, because that's what's going on.
I think that, that describing the sexual tension between them, paralleling that to a flaccid penis, is the perfect parallel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I think they're trying to be too subdued, like they're hiding their feelings for each other, and it just did not read. And the diversity was, hey, in this movie.
What are you
Noah
talking about?
Loved
the
Noah.
Diversity was on fire.
Fire?
Yes.
They had Noah and DJ Kenny Kwan.
They had the captain. She was black. They had also, can we forget about our two leads who are Hispanic? And but Maya then, was like she was Middle Eastern, maybe, or Indian?
Okay. Okay. I give you that the leads were Hispanic, yes, but they tried to paint Alexa Peña Vega more Caucasian, which I cannot stand. Her brother was definitely more Caucasian, and then she has the same hair color as her, so of course she's white too. Like, I wish they would not do that. Like, if you're gonna have somebody in there that's a certain ethnicity, like, just let them play their ethnicity. So that's why it says the diversity is they had better diversity than a lot of Hallmark movies, but it was just
I think the diversity was fire. I thought that
fire.
Yeah.
No, it might have had some sizzle, but it wasn't fire.
Don't double S sizzle me on that. We have Alexa Peña Corinne. Vega, Carlos Peña Vega.
Oh, hold on. Wait. Let's just go ahead and let you say what you think, how you thought the movie did, and then you could just go on your tangent.
I'm going to give it 3.5 dry kisses.
What? What?
For the following reasons.
Oh my God, I'm so glad we're taking a month off. I can't even look at you right now.
It is by far the most diverse Hallmark movie that I have ever seen. And it has really good diversity in it.
Cupid? What about the Cupid movie?
Playing Cupid? That was good. Yeah, I agree. But I would say that this had a wider spectrum of races in it.
Mm-hmm.
It had
black,
more of a rainbow.
They had Mexican. They had Mexicans playing whites. Yes. They had all the flavors. Yes.
And also, this was not made apparent in any of the commentary that we did. But, okay. So, let me tell you. The story in this is crap. The sexual tension between them is crap. But, oh my gosh. The set design is beautiful. The way they use color in this movie, they use it so intentionally, and it's these great pops of like turquoise and different colors like that. And they have all these like modern furnishings everywhere. And Tam is looking at me like I'm bananas, but she obviously did not pay attention to the set design throughout this. And it is amazing.
Okay.
And most Hallmark movies have terrible set design.
I mean, but does it merit a whole half a kiss? I thought you would land solidly in the 3 department on this one, and the 3.5 is for the set design and the diver. Okay. I mean, it's your rating. I'm just looking at you. I'm listening intently, and I'm looking at you.
I do think it was lacking in a few areas. But in response to, you know, the sister accidentally killing her brother when she meant to kill Jenna in a really bad murder plot, I would say that when one is unhinged, one does not think the most clearly about such things. And she was obviously unhinged, seeing as how in the end she was also blaming Jenna for her brother being killed.
You know what can help with unhinged thoughts? Some tasteful furniture decor and thoughtfully placed color.
Oh, the color in this movie. So good. Love the color story. And Nelson motherfucking Wong.
Okay.
3.5 dry kisses.
Okay.
Tamara may break up with me after this one.
I was sitting here gap-jawed the whole time going, lighting fixtures and teal folders do it for you. I never knew. Okay.
So, Miss Tamara, what do we have coming up next?
We're having a vacation! Yay! Woo! But we are going to re-release either the whole, if we can, or our part of the episode that we recorded with the lovely ladies of the She Nerds Out podcast. So we'll have some content for you next week, and then we will be off the following 4 weeks.
And we will also be occasionally dropping a little something-something in our stream during the month of June. Not full episodes, but we're also going to post the full interview with Carrie Francis and perhaps a little extra bonus material as well. We will see, but we won't leave you completely high and dry in the month of June while we do exciting things like...
High and dry. Dry kiss.
Hey! Things like Sister Memorial Service. Yay!
And then directly after Sister Memorial Service, family reunions and graduations on my behalf. Yay!
And then Tamara's birthday!
Which I am going to be experiencing after my crazy busy week, so I don't know how much I will be in the mood to celebrate.
And then we will be hitting Christmas in July, which super excited about.
Yes.
So, looking forward to all of that magic. And if you have anything you'd like to say about the movie that broke Tamara's and my relationship, Picture Perfect Mystery, Newlywed and Dead.
There has been worse. We have withstood worse. We're okay.
And you have strong feelings about my 3.5 dry kiss rating, please send that commentary on our way. You can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at onedrykiss.
Hang on a second. I'm going to say the rest of it after I finish writing the strongly worded email to you about your rating. onedrykiss@gmail.com. You say, okay, hold on. Stupid. 3.5. Color schemes. Okay. And that's one spelled O-N-E. You can. Hey, rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast. We appreciate hearing your feedback and knowing what you think. And thanks for stopping by. And as always, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. Half cred.